Thank you very much, Dean. It's good news to hear that Sierra Club is changing their path and getting back to the roots of involving communities, and obviously labor is key. So very good news. Maybe they can help with the standing to have local communities and labor be recognized as vital actors in legal work as well.
Yeah.
So, our next speaker, Joe Heath, is also a long-term Guild member. And Joe, I'm going to ask if you would move to that side so we get everybody in the picture. Joe represents the Onondaga Nation and in New York State. He's been also very, very involved in the stopping and resisting fracking in New York State. And he will discuss with us a perspective from more of an indigenous cosmovision value and how to bring that into our U.S. legal system, I guess, and resistance. So thank you, Joe.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for coming. We have a limited time, so I'll try to get through this. I've been fortunate enough to be general counsel for the Onondaga Nation since 1982. I have to turn my hearing aids down to stop the echo here. I've been a Guild member since 1971. Michael Deutsch there recruited me in October of 1971. He and Dennis said, we could use your help, man. Onondaga is a traditional Haudenosaunee nation. Most of you know the Haudenosaunee as the Iroquois. That's the French colonial term for them. It's a pejorative term. Haudenosaunee means people of the longhouse. I'll get into some more geography before we get done here. But generally, the Haudenosaunee are six nations now. This t-shirt is a replica of the original Hiawatha belt that was indicates the formation of the Confederacy 1,000 years ago. And it's Mohawk, Oneida, Onondaga is the central fire, the Cayuga and Seneca, and in this early 1700s, the Tuscaroras, having been driven out of South Carolina by the settlers, came and joined the Confederacy, and so now it's six nations. And they, essentially, their aboriginal territory was all of upstate New York. We do a lot of environmental work for Onondaga. There is a lake in central New York, I'll go over some of this geography again, that's the most polluted lake in the country, that's Onondaga Lake. That's where the peacemaker formed the Confederacy, on the shores of Onondaga Lake. It was illegally taken from them about 220 years ago, and then Allied Chemical, now Honeywell, polluted the lake for 100 years. It's an environmental disaster. Mercury, 60 feet into the sediment, 26 other toxic chemicals. That's my day job. My night job is fighting the gas industry as it attacks upstate New York. And I think that upstate New York is just a microcosm of what's going on everywhere in the United States and probably around the world. They're turning anywhere they think there's a fuel into a third world country. That's their goal, and they don't care what's in the way, and that's what we're fighting up there. So we do a lot of work to try to get people to understand that we need clean water and clean air, and that we shouldn't accept the industry and the government's point of view that it's okay if you have a very polluted lake. You just have to come to accept that. So here in 2008, the state of New York announced that they were going to start reviewing how to bring hydrofracking into New York State. And almost immediately, the Onondaga Nation said, well, this is a terrible idea. We're going to start fighting it. And the Haudenosaunee Environmental Task Force in 2009, March of 2009, issued this statement, and I want to read it to you, or portions of it, because it helps set the tone for what else we're going to do today. The Haudenosaunee nations and their people have a unique spiritual, cultural, and historic relationship with the land, which is embodied in the Great Law of Peace. The relationship goes far beyond federal and state legal concepts of ownership, possession, or other legal rights. The people are one with the land and all that depends on the land and consider themselves a part of it. It is for the nation's leaders to be stewards and to work for a healing of the land, to protect and pass on to future generations. The Haudenosaunee know that every part of the natural world is interrelated. When humans tinker more and more with the natural balance, we do so at the peril of our grandchildren. HETF engages in extensive environmental work on behalf of its people in the hope that it may hasten the process of reconciliation and bring lasting justice, peace, and respect among all living things, animal, bird, fish, plant, people who live on Turtle Island. Clean and abundant water is now the highest priority for human survival. Sorry for the typos. The natural world is the distributor of water according to the great systems that control our earth and its climate. It belongs to no one person, corporation, or nation. Privatization and pollution of water are fundamental violations of human rights and the rights of the natural world, and the balance of life is predicated on sharing the earth's resources. That's the message that the Haudenosaunee sent out to the people of Central New York 4 years ago, and that's how we do our cooperative work, cooperating with our neighbors, and the interaction has been amazingly invigorating for both sides. So this is upstate New York. I live about there, right about in the middle. This is the Mohawk River. That's Oneida Lake. You're beginning to see where the Haudenosaunee were here. Onondaga Lake is too small to be seen here. This is Cayuga Lake. This is Seneca Lake. So you have the five nations living across here using that land and water before the Europeans got here. This is a map of the center of New York that shows the Onondaga Aboriginal territory. This is Lake Ontario. This is their... So this is what they had before the Europeans got here. 200 and some acres, 200, 2.5 million acres. Now they've been confined to this currently recognized territory of 7,500 acres. So before the Europeans, they fished and hunted throughout this territory. Abundant water, thousands of lakes and rivers. Now they're confined to an area that has one creek going through it that's polluted by salt mining over the last century. So that's where we, this map was made when we filed their land rights action in March of 2005. The Supreme Court last week denied cert, and the courts have said that none of the Haudenosaunee nations can raise any of their treaty rights over their stolen land 200 years ago because they waited too long and it's not fair. And they made up a new equitable defense, they call it, that only applies to Indian nations. So that's the background. Then, just after we filed the land rights action, we hear about fracking coming to upstate New York. And this map shows the, this is the deeper shale formation. Most people that have heard about fracking in upstate New York have heard about the Marcellus Shale. The Marcellus is too shallow in most of New York for fracking. This is the Utica Shale, and it has to be at least 2,000 feet deep in order for them to frack. So all of this territory below that line is now subject to fracking. And that's what the industry intends to do. We have Exxon up there. They bought out XTO, and they have a lot of leases. But Chesapeake is our main lease. So the threats that we're now facing in upstate New York, not only fracking, which we've held off for 5.5 years, and I'll come back to the people's movement that's stopping that. About in May, we learned about a new pipeline that they intend to build, a 24-inch, 1,200-pound per square inch pipeline that they intend to build right through the middle of the Onondaga Aboriginal territory, within a mile of my house. We've begun to organize against that. They want to store 8 billion gallons of propane in abandoned salt caverns underneath Seneca Lake. What they have to do is they have all this frack gas from West Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Ohio. They have to move it. To some extent, they're moving it to markets, but mostly they're moving it to major pipelines so that they can export it. That's what they're going to do with this gas. As they rip up our country, turn the Finger Lakes into Texas, they're going to export the gas because they can get 6 times as much for it in Japan and China and Europe as they can get for it here. So they're now on this amazingly aggressive infrastructure building process that comes project after project, community after community is under attack, and that's what's going on now in upstate New York. People are fighting this everywhere. About a month ago, we learned about another major propane storage and distribution center that's about a mile and a half from my house. So that's what we're under up there. And I want to move now into the history of the Haudenosaunee resistance. So in June of 2008, we learned about fracking. You saw the statement in March, and the Onondaga Nation's drinking water supply is threatened by fracking and by leases. They have a newly constructed freshwater drinking system that puts clean water into every one of their homes. They spend $10 million of their own money, not a nickel of state or federal money. That spring fed, the watershed for those springs is off their territory. There are frack leases in that watershed. So that, they said, get to work, Joe. So, and they are very active also. Every rally that takes place in Albany is opened by an Onondaga speaker. And the interaction between the Haudenosaunee and the frack resistance, the fossil fuel resistance in upstate New York, is very, very intense, and it's just a very nice arrangement. So these days we do a lot of rallies. I speak 2 to 3 times a week on various topics here. We give workshops, general education, and in upstate New York, let me just skip ahead here. This is my county, by the way. These brown areas are leases. And it's 48% leased by less than 5% of the people. This is the same area. This is this proposed pipeline. I live up here on this small glacial lake. This is a dry Finger Lake, they call it. This is the new propane facility that they plan to build. So it's between a railroad spur where they're going to bring in propane, and we've just uncovered some Freedom of Information documents that show, whoops, Joe has to get trained, that show that they're going to also build a spur from the pipeline. So we'll have a multi-fuel statewide distribution with tanks right there. And what there is in upstate New York is a massive resistance movement, the largest resistance movement in over a century in upstate New York. Common people getting together, working in their towns, and there's just no control of this industry by either the federal or the state government. I know that's hard to believe, you just have to take my word for it. In 2005, Cheney got Congress to approve the 2005 Energy Act, which exempts oil and gas exploration from most of the major provisions of all our major environmental laws. Why would we have environmental laws if oil and gas drilling is not controlled by them? There's just nothing at the federal level in the state. They just keep chopping the DEC. The DEC is in bed with the industry. And so towns now are exercising home rule and banning fracking, and that really freaked the industry out. As soon as the town started doing that about 2 years ago, this is a movement that I represent 3 municipalities in now. And what they've done is you can't regulate how gas is done, but you can ban it. And so town after town, over 100 towns now have banned fracking. Yeah. So immediately they got sued. We won 3-4 cases in the lower court, that's the Supreme Court in New York. The oil companies changed the plaintiffs and took it to the appellate division. We won there unanimously about 6 months ago. It's now in the Court of Appeals. And that's the kind of work that's going on in upstate New York. And I just want to move really briefly to echo what we just heard. First of all, this is a violation of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. We don't have time for that. We're at a crossroads. We all need to understand that. I think you all do. We cannot switch from one fossil fuel to another. First of all, gas is not cleaner than coal. I don't call it natural gas. We don't call it natural coal. This is just one of the many gases they get out of these formations. You get butane, propane, so it's gas. But when you figure in the entire life cycle, the extreme energy manipulations that it takes to get this stuff out of the ground, it takes frack gas to get to the tar sands because you have to heat it, but you have to use an amazing amount of energy, and it's always leaking methane every step of the way. Cornell professors have now shown that fracked gas is dirtier than coal when it comes to the impact on climate change because of the amount of methane that's leaked. It's 105 times worse. Methane is 105 times worse than CO2 for climate change over a 20-year period. If we don't do something in 20 years, we've just seen what that means. So this is not an acceptable alternative. And so we have to change. That's what we just heard. This is a small vertical access wind turbine. It goes like this. That's about 8 feet all around. We're working with the developer of this to put one of these on my house. We also have, we know big wind, there's some problems with that. This is my basement. This is a geothermal heating system. No fossil fuels in it. You drill down and get enough mass of water at a constant 51 degrees temperature, and somehow, physics is way beyond me, you can heat and cool your house with this. That's what we have now in our house. We know about solar. This is what we have to do, or this is what we're going to be faced with. And so that's what's going on in upstate New York. The Haudenosaunee are very much involved in it. The people are rising up every day. There's more and more work up there. And we need lawyers up there. Because we need lawyers to represent individuals, there's massive civil disobedience going on right now. I have for the last 2.5 years become the lease buster. Now, if you had told me 40 years ago that my career would be contracts and busting leases, I would have told you you're crazy. But the companies are desperate to hold on to their leases because their 5-year term is expiring, and they're playing all sorts of legal games to do that. We're taking them on and holding our own there. We have leases to fight a pipeline. We need lawyers to go into for eminent domain because they will get eminent domain handed to them by FERC. In Pennsylvania, landowners are being saddled with mechanics liens. They can't move their houses because Chesapeake won't pay their bills down there. We have towns. We just had an activist in Pennsylvania hit with a slap suit on Monday. Friday afternoon, she's served with papers. Monday morning, she's in court with 4 lawyers from Pittsburgh. This is in Susquehanna County, northern Pennsylvania. And she now has a temporary injunction against her so that she can't go near their frack fields. She's the woman who gave Yoko and Sean the tour. So that's the kind of work that we have upstate where we need lawyers. But what we really need to do is keep moving to stop the Koch brothers from ruining our country. So on one hand, we have the Koch brothers that are going to make $100 billion from the Keystone, spending millions and millions and millions of that to fight the offshore wind program over in Nantucket Sound. So that's what we're doing, and we could use some help, and thanks for listening.
Is that you in the picture, Joe?
Thank you. This just goes to underscore that whether you're in New York, state, or Costa Rica, where I live, or Puerto Rico, or Spain. I was just in Spain a few weeks ago with my mother. We're touring. We're in Castro Urdial, and we go into this beautiful ruin on the coast. And there's a whole exhibit lining this room on the anti-fracking movement. And there's a whole movement there to the threats. And the community all knows. You talk to anybody around, and they know that fracking is a threat to all of their UNESCO and historic sites. You know, we're talking about churches that were built in 1100 that could fall apart because of fracking. Anyway, it was just fascinating to see how this is just spearheaded across the planet, and the important battles in New Mexico will now also be brought to us from Mariel. I'm not sure, Nanasi, is that her name? Okay, Nanasi. Mariel, we're also honored to have a longtime Guild member who was the law student a national rep that when she was back in the day, and she's still in the day fighting on the front lines, and will be talking to us about some of their important victories in southwestern United States. She's the executive director of an organization that I think you founded, or no, but okay, sorry.
She founded.
They found her. Anyway, it's called the New Energy Economy, and it's based in Santa Fe. So thank you.
Thank you. So I have been, I was the National Lawyers Guild student vice president under Haywood Burns when Haywood Burns was the brings back a rush of memories here. And I just want to first say that like Joe, the People's Law Office had an enormous impact, still has an enormous impact, in the formation of my political life. I'll just say that. There's two things that I want to say that has stayed with me that sort of directs who I am in the world. And one of them is not only elevating the positions of my client, but living not only beside them, but with them. Like, I dream about them. Everything about who they are and where they stand, I am with them. And I think that that's a tremendous, important position. And it's given my life meaning. I just will say that. The other thing is that political organizing, and you know, we've all spoken to this today, is integral to legal victories. Like, they just don't happen one without the other. That's how I see it. You can't, even if you get a policy confirmed, it's not going to stay unless you have the people behind you, right? So that has been also just intertwined with everything I've done. I will say that one of the proudest moments after I left Chicago, where I was a lawyer for a long time, I was a criminal defense lawyer and a civil rights lawyer, I moved to New Mexico in 2001, and we had the largest anti-Rumsfeld demonstration in New Mexico history before the war. One of my greatest victories was when the town of Taos, which that's where I was living, wouldn't let us put up a banner against Donald Rumsfeld, because Rumsfeld had at that time four estates there, and was bringing Dick Cheney at our expense to flew into Taos and wanted to show him all his estates, and we wanted to fly a banner that said. They had a banner that said, first let me just place this contextually, they had a banner that said, welcome Vice President Dick Cheney and Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, right? So, and it's like this open space, right, across the main road in Taos. So then after that is, we rented the space, you know, filled out everything perfectly, and we had a banner that said, act against Warren Empire, act against war and empire, act now for peace, fire Rumsfeld. And Town of Taos said no. And I said, really? If you say no to that, I'm going to file a lawsuit against you. And we did. They said no. We filed a lawsuit. It was the only time in my entire life that that day we won the lawsuit. And the next day it flew, and then after that they had to pay attorney's fees. But there's many other stuff. I just had to share that, even though that's not exactly directly on point, but sometimes those are really sweet. So I wanted to say that as I'm now the executive director of New Energy Economy in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and we have three purposes. One is to shut down coal. One is to implement effective climate policy, and the next is to create community, model community solar projects, because where we are, there's a lot of sun. And Naomi Klein, who's a personal heroine of mine, speaks about something called activist DNA. And what she says is, you know, the way that DNA is intertwined. I'm supposed to be turning this, but I forgot about this.
Yeah, go ahead.
I will in a second. But I just want to say that activist DNA is, on the one hand, you have to resist the power. So literally in my situation, I am confronting the electric monopoly in Santa Fe, in New Mexico. And that is, they have, just their energy portfolio is 60% coal, 20% nuclear, 14% gas, 6% wind, and 1% solar. 1% solar in a state that some people call the Saudi Arabia of sun. And so to me, this is unconscionable. If you know what the New Mexico flag is, it's a blazing sun zia. And yet we have 1% solar, and that's because they've been blocking it. So one on the one strand of DNA is to resist the power. The other strand of DNA that's intertwined, activist DNA, is to expose the vision of what's possible. So I think that's one of the things that has failed our movement a lot. We, you know, even these little wins are just so little because we're just constantly pushing up against this onslaught. And they are saying, we just can't do it. Like, you know, it's really sweet that you want solar, but it's not really possible. Or wind, or geothermal, or all these other possibilities. The problem is they haven't figured out how to capitalize on it, literally. I mean, literally, yeah. The senior vice president of this company, it's called Public Service Company of New Mexico, ironically, right? So Orwellian. So this guy, his name is Ron Darnell, vice president of PNM, said to me, Marielle, we just haven't figured out how to make money off of solar. And I was like, then you don't need to be in the energy business, you know, which is really the truth of it. And so that's the other side. And we have been doing these energy projects with solar energy projects with unlikely allies. So I want to get first, I want to just say one thing about the first strand about something that we've done and then also the second. But I just will go through this. This is just, I want you to know that this is bark beetles. And 1.3 million acres have died, forest has died. They say that in New Mexico, Colorado, and Arizona, that the forest will be gone by 2050. That's how serious we're talking about it. Drought, I'm sure you've heard about the drought. This is affecting us in every single way. Agriculture, huge. Just last night we were hearing about the prices of food just rising astronomically. And if you know about some of the wars that have happened in the world, it's over food. Colorado and New Mexico has experienced unprecedented flooding, right? Wildfires. This was just in Chavez County, but in 2011 and 2012, sorry, one second, we had back-to-back record-breaking wildfires. 650,000 acres went up in smoke. And I will just tell you that I walked in the charred forests with firefighters, and that's something that I think is really important, is that we face the devastation, that we experience that climate reality. And to walk into a forest that is nothing but ash, that's as barren as a moonscape, is an intense emotional experience. And I have organized people, and we've gone with firefighters, with, can you believe this? There's tree mortality experts now. And they have led us through that. I was at this one place, I will just tell you, it was in a canyon, and the fire was raging so high that there were 300-foot flames, and there was something called a pyrocumulus cloud that pushed down on this fire, which was a cold cloud, and forced the fire to cascade down the canyon so fast. It was burning 1 acre a second.
Oh my God.
1 acre a second. It was the hottest fire that they've ever seen in the United States. The only other fire that they've seen is the fires in 2010 in Russia when the wheat fields went up, which caused devastating prices to go up there. When we were, I was standing on the mesa, like, so it's like this. Here's the canyon where the fire's cascading. I'm standing here. The trees up here, they didn't scorch or burn. They baked in place. They've never seen this in the history of fires. So here's their tree with its leaves on, dead, but just so many of them. And it's just it's just tremendous to see. So it's really important to face reality. And then record-breaking heat we've experienced in the Southwest, Arizona and New Mexico, just hotter temperatures. This is the coal plant that I fight against. So this is one of the largest, not the largest, but one of the largest coal plants in the entire Southwest. It produces coal, the electricity. This is where 60% of New Mexico's electricity comes from. But it also produces a lot of the electricity for Arizona and for California. 60,000 air quality violations. 60,000. The state gave them a penalty, and that penalty was $6.9 million. That's like if you or I were speeding and we got a 10-cent ticket. It matters nothing in our lives, and I really mean that, nothing, to get a 10-cent ticket. And that's the kind of things that we're facing. 8 billion gallons of water annually this plant uses. And, you know, we're experiencing, as you saw, a drought in New Mexico, and yet this coal plant is consuming that water. And it's clean water. It's clean water in, toxic water out. And you can't see it in here, but there are some, these are holding ponds. And the way that they deal with this water is that there's literally a fountain in the middle, and it's supposed to evaporate the water. So it just goes out into the air, this toxic water that's in these holding ponds. 12 million tons of carbon dioxide. A year, 18,000 tons of nitrogen oxides, 5,500 tons of sulfur dioxides, 75% of all the waterways in New Mexico are contaminated by mercury from this not only this coal plant, but there's others too. We did a study for a lawsuit that I was involved in 2012, and the New York University Department of Health found that there was $250 million of what they call externalized costs, right? Because these companies do not pay, as Joe was talking about, these companies don't pay for their waste and their pollution. We pay. And we pay in asthma. And 1 out of 4 New Mexican high school students has asthma. Like, we are changing the chemistry of our air and our children. And I took this photo. This is a Native American boy. He's 5 years old. He's just trying to breathe. Like, what are we doing to our planet, to our children? It's the first thing you do when you're born is breathe, and it's the last thing that you do. And we are stealing the breath away from our children. That's the kind of world that they're inheriting. And so, you know, just like we talk about standing with our clients, whenever I file a lawsuit or am speaking, I'm thinking about him, like, he's in my mind, and he is part of why I do what I do. Look at these, I don't know if you can see this, but they're like bears, little baby bears on this asthma pump. It's pretty sick. So going now to the, oh, what I wanted to just tell you is that last year I intervened in a rape case. And basically, I don't think that it's ever been done in the United States before, but we had a novel theory that coal was not, was a bad financial investment, and that they, that PNM shouldn't recover, it's called cost recovery, their rates. And what we said was that their economic assumptions are leading it to cost more for ratepayers, and therefore they should close coal. And we didn't win the rate case, but we did win a very, very important thing in the order, which was that the San Juan, that plant that I showed you, the San Juan coal plant, for going forward, closing it had to be on the table at every decision going forward, which was huge, which led to this year, half of that plant, the announcement, we brokered a deal with PNM that half of that plant would be shut down. Now, unfortunately, it's 2017, and it's not quick enough, but the reality is that we have not built a sufficient movement, which is exactly what we've talked about from at the beginning of this. And so the thing that I'm doing is, as I said, so that's like the fighting the power part, which we're making some progress, but it's just little teeny victory after victory, just pushing them aside. But this other thing that I'm doing, frankly, is causing a lot more momentum. And that is that choosing to partner with different groups. And I put solar on strategic places with different organizations. So this was at the Crown Point Chapter House in Navajo Nation. And I was there taking that picture of Kami and Woody. And this nurse said to me, you know, 30 years ago, I never saw a kid come in to the hospital gasping for air. But now I see it on a weekly basis. And I was just like, what? And she says, you white people, you always come to Navajo Nation, you tell us how bad coal is, and you tell us how bad uranium is, but we have no solar here. And she said, I just wish that we had solar on this Crown Point Chapter House. And the Chapter House is like their community center, and it's where their political and social gatherings take place. And I said to her, I can do that. And she said, okay. So 8 months later, we put these two solar tractors, there's two solar tractors up on the Crown Point Chapter House and had an enormous celebration. And after that, we've partnered with a number of different other organizations. One was firefighters. So I thought, we got to put solar on the fire station in Santa Fe. And we chose the largest fire station, and the firefighters were totally on board. A group of allies that are now, like, we're best friends. I'm really serious. They come out to all the demonstrations, and firefighters are fantastic messengers. So so we have this campaign called Soul Not Coal, and it's gone so successfully, I'll just leave it at this, that we just did another partnership with another group, County of Santa Fe, fire station there, 100% solarized, and about a month ago, after that celebration and showing that it was cost effective and that it was actually going to redirect money that was going to be spent on utility bills towards things like they need, like fire protection. And as you see, the firefighters need fire protection. And the county last month of Santa Fe just voted to solarize all fire stations in Santa Fe County, which is a huge, it was a huge scale up from just doing one. So that's the kind of a thing, is to do a seed project that builds momentum with community, you know, untraditional allies, not just environmentalists, and really raise the issue. So it's time to scale it up, and that's what we're doing. And the next thing what we're in the process of doing also is, because we have not been successful in the big enough scale with this company called PNM, we are launching what's called a public power option, which is basically to kick them out, use the power of eminent domain, kick them out of Santa Fe County, and then solarize the entire county. So that's the plan.
Burn them out.